Okay, keep your eyes closed.
Okay.
I want to show you my first ever painting.
All right.
Okay. Open your eyes.
Oh, that's a lot of colors and shapes.
So be honest. What do you think?
Well, I like how if you switch to Geico, you could save hundreds of dollars on car insurance.
Oh, yeah, that's true.
Yeah. Here, why don't I hold your paintbrush while you call them?
Geico, because saving 15% or more on car insurance is always a great answer.
What's up, golf addicts? David Barnett here with the Tour Junkies. Thank you for downloading our podcast for this week, which we're going to cover the Tour Championship at Eastlake, the final event for this PGA Tour season. But boy, do we cover a lot of other random stuff, including translating Korean golfers' Instagram captions, the horrible things that I drew in my yearbook as a kindergartner and first grader, talking to a 13-year-old through the girls' conversation and, like, the puberty conversation. We hit into that. It's just an all-around grab bag show for the night. And, of course, we're going to give you the stats, the course data, the picks, the players that we like and don't like for the Tour Championship. It's just a good time. So thanks again for downloading the show and subscribing. We will continue to have podcasts throughout this little break that we get in the PGA Tour season, including we're going to line up some great interviews for you guys. So keep it locked right here on the Tour Junkies podcast. We greatly appreciate your support this season. It has meant a lot. And shout out to Swing Caddy for sponsoring this episode. If you guys don't have a swing caddy, you need to check it out. I just did a great video with one of those things this past weekend. We can get you a promo code. It takes a swing caddy price from $350 to $290 retail. You can get it on our website. Go to tourjunkies.com. Click the link at the top. Put in Tour Junkies, all one word, all lowercase, in the promo box when you check out, and you're good to go. So thanks again, guys. Enjoy the podcast, and may your screens be green. What's up, golf addicts? The Tour Junkies podcast, the last podcast for this PGA Tour season. We're here for the Tour Championship at Eastlake, right down the street here in Atlanta, Georgia. I'm David Barnett, your host. I got Pat Perry on with me. What's up, PP?
I'm good. Just ready to talk Tour Championship. Like you said, right down the street. In ATL,
shouty, home of, you know, Ludacris and Pastor Troy. Anybody, you remember Pastor Troy? You know who Pastor Troy is?
No.
We ready. Remember that rap song, Pastor Troy and them down south Georgia boys? Remember that?
I don't remember that one.
Anyway. Yeah, so the final leg, Tour Championship, 30 players remain. We had Mark Leishman wire to wire at the BMW this past week in Chicago. We had a pretty good week. I mean, you know, for a no-cut event and 69 players in the field, we had five guys in the top 10, including Mark Leishman, who we both said, he's chalk, but you need to eat it. And then we had 10 in the top 20. So, and none of them missed the cut. Pat, we had zero missed cuts, which is phenomenal.
Oh, that is phenomenal.
Yeah.
I mean, how do we do that?
I don't know. So, yeah, it was a decent week for us. We had some listeners get some green screens. We saw some tweets, some shout-outs. We appreciate that. That's awesome. And we're ready to go at it for another week. And then, so I think we need to get this out of the way. A lot of people asking, like, what's the schedule going forward? What are we doing? Obviously, the tour season ends with Eastlake at the Tour Championship, and then we've got the President's Cup coming, which we may or may not have a podcast for that, not sure. And then we've got like a two-week break, and the swing season starts like mid-October, I believe, with the Safeway from Napa. I think that's right. So,
that is correct.
Obviously, we will have podcasts for each tournament of the swing season all the way up through the end of the year. In the weeks where there's not a tournament, we will likely have a podcast coming out with a guest interview or a strategy show. So continue to check the podcast feed. But you know what? Just subscribe and set your notifications. So every time we give you a new episode, it'll pop up on your phone and you'll be the first one. You'll know it's there. It'll be good stuff. Do it.
Or just follow us on Twitter if you're
not following.
Follow
us on Twitter at @tour_junkies. Hey, remember back in the day when we were like first starting out and the only thing that mattered that we pumped was Twitter? That was it. That's all we pumped. We didn't have ads. Which, hey, listen, don't be pissed off at the ads, people, because the ads pay the bills, okay? The ads keep me and P. Perry doing this for 48 weeks out of the year, okay? Because, like, we love this. It's a lot of fun. But there does come a point where your boy and your other boy don't really want to knock this thing out again another week and, like, do all this stuff. And so, you know, it's...
Like, maybe in a 30...
In a 30-man field with no cut, yeah.
48 weeks? Good God almighty, that's how many weeks we do this?
Well, no, I'm not saying 48. Well, if you think about it, it's probably a little bit less than 48, but 52 weeks in a year, right? There is
it's probably close, though.
From January to now, there is zero break. Like, there's not a break. So that's 9 months, basically, that there is there is a podcast. And then when you count swing season and any other cash game strategy or fill-in stuff, there's probably 4 to 7 weeks of the year we don't actually do a show. And it's been that way for almost 2 years now.
But then we're working to have some good shows even when we don't have a...
That's exactly right. Yeah, I mean, we don't... Listen, we are no big deal. Like, we're not no laying up. We're not Barstool. People are not banging down our door to get on our show. So we have to make this thing happen. We get tour pros on and caddies and all that stuff. It's because we network the fool out of stuff. Yeah, so we're working even when we're not on the mic. This is the easiest part, actually, is like actually talking about it.
Oh, yeah, this is by far the easiest part.
Not, you know, it sounds like we're pissing and moaning here, Pat, but we're not. We're not. We're happy campers. We love what we do. We love TJ. We love the listeners. We love the people who engage with us on Twitter. We love doing it. It's a lot of fun. We've enjoyed doing it this year yet again, and we're just going to keep it going. But...
Well, I mean, you know, you got to be real here. I mean, the thing is that we're winding down the season. You know, we want to give some good advice, obviously, but it's a 30-man, let's just call it, you know, a spade a spade. I mean, it is what it is. It's 30-man field. When you get down to this point, you're kind of near the end of the season. You're just kind of, you know, now I don't want to say you're going through the motions because you're not. I mean, we're putting in all the effort we always do, but... A break will be well deserved, I believe.
Yeah, a break will be well deserved. And I do grow weary of the no cut events, which we've had the last few actually. I've grown a little weary of them. It just feels like it's just such a crapshoot. The edge is gone, and it's just a little bit annoying. So.
Well, and we're in the midst of football season now.
Football,
we're week two of the NFL, week three college football.
Yeah.
It's by the way, I continue to just really suck at NFL DFS.
Yeah, don't take our advice on NFL DFS.
Well, we don't give any.
Yeah, true. If we ever do, just don't listen.
Don't listen to us. Do the opposite.
You know, the one thing I'll say is we're more season long NFL guys. Like, we're pretty good season long fantasy players. Now, I do have to say for the record, in our 16 man Legion of Boom, which is our 16 man PPR league in Yahoo that we did very last minute. We drafted the night before the first game where the Patriots play the Chiefs. 16 man big boy league with Steven Bowditch, John Peterson, Carl Paulson, Coach Esser is another kind of D-list celebrity on that in that league. You and I, and then some listeners. We got a lot of listeners in that league that got in. I am 2-0. And I beat you week one, and I just put a smackdown on Steven Bowditch week two. And I'm feeling pretty good about myself. Feeling pretty good about my team.
That's always good.
But yeah, 2-0 is a good feeling.
Well, not so much for me.
Yeah.
It's not very good. I think I'm ranked 14 out of 16 after week one, and I'm going to lose this week, so it's probably... it's not going to be any better than 14. So, by the way, how many playoff teams are we taking?
Still only 6 playoff teams. Got to be in the top 6.
Good Lord.
Yep.
All right, well, I'm done. That was a fun season.
All right, hey, but you know, this is a short field, obviously, so we're not going to name every player in the field, despite a lot of you people probably thinking that. We're not going to do that. But can we have a little non-golf content right now real quick?
Hey.
Would you allow that?
Sure.
I just got to get real for a minute. All you dads out there, all you parents out there, all you future dads maybe. I have a 13-year-old son, okay? And when he turned like 9, my wife and I would say, man, he's weird. You know, like we would think 9-year-old boys are just weird creatures, right? The 13-year-old version is really weird, okay? Makes the 9-year-old look like he could run for office, okay? The stuff that you talk about with a 13-year-old is just, it's very odd. It's very strange. And right before this podcast tonight, I had a conversation with my wife and my 13-year-old. It's just weird. You know, we're getting into that whole like girls thing where like mom is trying to get son to really open up about girls and about like how he feels about girls. And does he like any girls? And does he think any girls are cute? And do any girls think he's cute? And do you want to date? Do you know why you can't date? Because you don't have a car and you don't have a job. And like we're getting into that whole thing, and I can just, having been a former 13-year-old boy, I can tell when he is completely BSing his mother, you know? And now yeah. I'm watching her, and I'm like, you're smarter at this age than my mom was when I was 13, and he's still pulling one over on you. Like, she doesn't get it. But the boy is into girls and is just a closed door. Well, not like lips are locked. He's lying through his teeth. Okay, and for some reason, like kids are just wired different, right? Like I was nothing like that. My wife doesn't like to ask me how I was when I was younger when it comes to girls because I may have been the exception. And she may have grown up in a family with nothing but girls, and so she had no idea that boys like me existed until she married me. But like I was digging chicks in like kindergarten, bro. I mean, I was picking up girls in kindergarten. And she asks me sometimes, like, you know, think back when you were his age and where were you with this? And what did you think about this? And was this happening? And what were you doing here? And I'm like, you know, I mean, I was French kissing chicks like long before this kid's even knew what it was. You know what I mean? Like, so I'm probably wrong person to ask.
I gotta interject here because I'm feeling a moment here because you know your boy P actually is as much as you may not think it
hasn't kissed a girl in like 6 months.
No, was very similar. At a young age, I love girls from an early age.
No, I mean, believe that.
Just,
I believe that.
Just killed it.
Yeah,
was the first, and you could ask anybody in my grade school, the first to French kiss.
Okay, how old were you?
I was in third grade.
Wow. Yeah, that's a little better than your boy. that's quite young.
In the playhouse in the backyard, I can remember it still to this day.
Was it your playhouse?
No, it was a classmate. I even remember her name.
Do you really? What was her name? Call her
Meredith.
On the podcast. What was her last name?
Meredith. I'm not gonna say.
She lives
last
in Augusta,
name.
Doesn't she? it's the biggest small town in the state of Georgia. Augusta is. Wow, that's interesting. Yeah, I mean. I was kissing on girls. I was kissing on honeys starting in like kindergarten, but I wasn't doing the French kissing thing until like 7th grade. No.
So I beat you there.
Yeah, 7th grade. But you know, and we've had this conversation about my skating green hose and all that stuff, but Like, my guy right now, my 13-year-old right now, is just in that really awkward phase where he's figuring stuff out. And, yeah, okay, I'll give you another example. I bet you didn't do this, okay? And my wife will kill me for telling this story, but this is real. I'm not trying to be disgusting. I'm just trying to be honest with I'm just trying to be honest as to who I was. So first of all, let me give you a little backstory. My sister, my oldest sister, no, my youngest sister was like 18. No, yeah, she was like 14 when I was born, okay? So I remember like being a 5-6-year-old, and my sister was a cheerleader. She was a homecoming queen, and she was very social. So like I remember being 5, 6, 7, and there always being people at the house, always being cheerleaders at the house. My sister was in beauty pageants all the time, so she was like a pageant girl. And like, so we were always,
oh, yeah.
I would be at home with my parents, and like my mom and my sister would be watching beauty pageants on TV, so I would watch. And like, I could tell, at a young age, I was determining which ones were pretty and which ones weren't, right? Which is, you know, what, my wife is going to hate this. If you're listening, babe, I love you. I'm sorry. But this is just, this was really me. This is DB. But one thing that I did that absolutely my wife abhors that I did. I mean, absolutely hates that I did this. And I still have the proof today. And that is starting, I believe, the earliest yearbook that I have where I did this may have been kindergarten at a Christian school. But if it wasn't that, it was definitely first grade at a public school. I would draw breasts on the pretty girls' pictures in the yearbook.
Oh my gosh.
In like kindergarten. Yeah.
Wait, like. I can't.
Like a circle with a dot in the middle of it. Like I wasn't some graphic artist. That it's just a very simple elementary.
But how did you just, like, did you size it up, or was it just like, I'm just going to put a normal size breast, or like,
yeah, I don't think I don't think I had at that age, I don't think I really had a concept like, okay, these are huge, these are small, these are, I just, if they were pretty, I just drew it on there because I just drew it on there. And then some of the ugly ones, I actually wrote on the picture ugly, or I drew like, or I drew like devil horns, and I did this in Sharpie in my yearbook. Okay. And I still have those yearbooks. If I can get them, if I can locate them and take a picture without my wife losing her mind, I will share that. But maybe I'll share that.
Oh man, but I really want you to tweet that out or something, but I don't know. You might get in trouble for
yeah,
that.
Yeah, I might. But you know, the stuff that I was doing at the age I was doing it is well ahead of where my current 13-year-old is doing it. Now, I think my 7-year-old, who is my mini-me, will be more on my speed, which is not a great thing necessarily. But it's just parenting is tough, man. That's all I got to say. It's just tough. By the way, speaking of boobs, did you hear about Clay Travis?
I did.
I mean,
yeah.
Getting is quite entertaining. It's quite polarizing that what he said. But basically, if you didn't catch it, he was on CNN being interviewed about the Jemele Hill ESPN stuff, and the reporter threw out the question to him, and he said that there are two things in life. What did he say? There are two things in life that have never done me wrong, or something like that, or how did he phrase it? Do you remember?
Basically, like two things that I believe in, and that's the First Amendment,
right?
And boobs.
And boobs.
and he did say like those would never let you down or something like that. But
but the CNN anchor was just mortified and completely caught off guard in this live interview on national television, and she made him re-explain it. Like, say it again. And then she did it a third time at the end. She's like, I'm sorry, I just can't take in anything you said because I'm wondering if you really said boobs or if you said booze, like B-O-O-Z-E. And he's like, no, boobs. which is a he's getting a lot of heat for, and I get it to some extent. Maybe shouldn't have
said
it.
But isn't he there's something but
there's
I'm
some,
not
there's some refreshing there, truth to that.
There well there is, and there's also something I haven't quite figured out in my mind that he's getting to, but I think it is basically when saying that, he's using the First Amendment to say that.
Right. So he's kind of I caught that too. Like he's saying something that he knows he can say just because he can say it, and it's
He's reinforcing the First Amendment is what he's doing.
Yeah, he's a smart guy. That could be something he does. Anyway, that just made me... I thought about that for some reason when I started thinking about my kindergarten yearbook illustrations.
Yeah, if you folks listening, you got to go out and watch it if you haven't, though. It is pretty funny. And she just, like, totally is just... It is... It's pretty funny. It's pure normal CNN, though. For you, not getting too political, but it is. I mean,
Yes. You know what? Another new favorite pastime of mine is right now. If you follow, this is I'm transition slightly to golf, just slightly. If you are on Instagram, first of all, you should follow us on Instagram at @tour_junkies. Okay, but if you're on Instagram, does anyone follow Ben On? Like Ben Young On, whatever. The golfer, right? If not, it's at BENAN0917. Okay. That's the Instagram handle.
I think I follow him.
Well, you follow him because Tour Junkies follows him. Yes, right. Yeah. We follow him. Yes.
Oh yeah, we follow him.
So here's what's fun. You may have never done this. But he does a lot of his Instagramming in his native tongue. Which I'm not sure. It's very ethnocentric of me and ignorant of me, but I don't really know how that works. I guess he has a keyboard that is in Korean. Is he Korean? No. What is he? Do you know?
I don't know. I feel like
you're I can't remember what he is. Yeah. Anyway. But so he types it in that, but in Instagram you have the ability to hit see translation underneath. And it's a little like our Google voicemails that we get. It's very broken. So it's fun to see what the actual picture video on Instagram is, and then getting the translation when it makes very little sense to what's actually in the picture. Like, for example,
he posted, by the way, it is South Korea. South Korea.
Okay, good. Thanks for laying that up. Yeah. He posted a video. It looks like him and all his friends hanging out, and there's all these girls posing for a picture, drinking wine. And if you hit the translation,
I didn't even know that feature existed.
Yeah, the caption literally says this. So again, you got the picture. All these girls are posing. It's a video, though. Like, they're posing for a picture. They got their wine. They're very well dressed. They look like they're in a nice restaurant. And the caption says, "You're going to be in the queue. It's almost the best thing I've ever seen."
Hmm. What does that mean?
And then, like, one of the people commented in the South Korean language, and then when you translate that, it says, "I've had it for you, LOL, cute." So somebody's got a little crush on, Ben On.
Too bad he's taking Instagram pics and videos with a bunch of ladies.
Well,
is he like a ladies' man on?
Ben On could be a little, he could be. He could be. I'm not gonna put.
Is he like a David Barnett?
Maybe.
Do you think he's drawing boob pictures on the?
There's a joke that I can make that's inappropriate, but I'm not. There's another one of his. There's another one of his dinner, his birthday dinner, and he says, "Thank you." The translation says, "Thank you. For the first time, we're celebrating my birthday," which is kind of sad. I mean, if that's the first time Ben On's birthday has ever been celebrated, that's really unfortunate.
What's the draw, by the way, on Instagramming and tweeting pictures of your dinners? Like, I mean, everybody's had a nice dinner every once in a while or whatever. Like, I don't get it, but it's like that. I'd like the stats on the most Instagrammed themed picture or whatever, because I bet you dinners are up there. Food or whatever you're drinking.
Yeah, you're right. You're probably right. It'd be up there. Last one I'm going to give you. So that same party where all the girls are posing, he's at a, it's a big group picture of all of them. And the caption, when translated, says, "Sejong, the super reunion. It's been a long time since I met my friends in a long time, but it's a fun night about a loop tower. So beautiful, and food too." "It's been a long time since I met my friends in a long time. Mila yo long time." That's what I kept thinking about. All right. We're digressing here. We do have another piece of just pointless content that we have to get into for the moment, and it is the new segment, hashtag piss off Pat. We asked you guys to call in, leave some voicemails in an attempt to piss off Pat, and we got a number of them. But listen, keep them coming, because we're gonna store these things up, and we need to get more of these things in the hopper. So
one of these days there's gonna be a really fantastic one that is really truly gonna piss me off, and I can't wait to go off.
Yeah, and when it does, we're gonna hook you up with some TJ swag if you can actually piss Pat off. Now here's the thing. I want to warn a couple of you who have called in and left voicemails, and we really appreciate the effort, and the engagement is top-notch. We love it when you guys engage with the show and with the podcast and with us. That's our favorite thing. So whether you're retweeting or Instagramming or commenting or emailing us or leaving a voicemail, we appreciate all forms of engagement. However, we can tell when you're trying to piss Pat off, and it's like you're being a little too, like you're a little too Timmy Tryhard right now. Like, you know,
yeah,
if you just call and bash Kisner for no other reason other than just to bash Kisner, and you really don't have any great evidence to back it up, like, we know what you're doing. Good effort. A for effort, good idea. But, you know, Pat's got to feel the sincerity behind it, right? And if you truly just don't like Kevin Kisner, like, you need to bring the heat as to why. And there's got to be facts, okay? So if you want to call in and leave a voicemail, it's 706-6233-4-2-8. Okay, 706-6233-4-4-2-8. Okay, 706-6-ADDICT. That's how you leave a voicemail. Leave a voicemail. If you're not on the show the next week, don't worry. You could get on the following week. So we have a voicemail that I want to play for you now. And Pat, you may recognize the voice on the other end. You may not. But we're going to give it a listen and see what you think about it. And there we go.
"Hello, Patricia. This is Wine Diva with an update on your wine delivery. This is our second attempt to deliver a case of Skinny Girl Pinot Grigio to your residence. This package does require a signature. We were able to leave the box of cocktail umbrellas as they were shipped separately and do not require signature. Happy sipping. Thanks for your business."
I love that one. That's actually, I really like that one. So, Pat, did you happen to recognize the voice on the other end of the voicemail?
I did.
Who might that be?
I'm pretty sure that was our buddy Moose Metzger's wife, right?
Ding, ding, ding. We have a winner. That is Mrs. Moose, Mara Metzger. She is a trip. I love the voicemail. Hey, hello, Patricia. I thought that was
The funny thing is that I have several friends whose wives call me Patricia, which is funny that she said that. So as a joke, they do the same thing. So, but, you know, it's hard for me. I can't get, you know, Mara can't piss me off. I'm sorry, but she's great.
I
think she's awesome. Moose is a lucky man, much like you and I are with our wives as well. So,
yep. Better put that disclaimer in there, buddy.
The what?
Better put that disclaimer in there. Yes, yeah, Mara. Exactly. Mara is quite the life of the party. She is a lot of fun, and Pat enjoys her company for sure. But it was very funny. She is creative. She's clever. I love. This is our second attempt to deliver a case of Skinny Girl Pinot Grigio.
Yeah.
That and then was, she said that we were able to leave the box of cocktail umbrellas.
Yeah. Very creative. Good
she
stuff.
Is,
I liked it.
Yeah. That's
so
funny.
So here's the lesson here, though. Even though I knew who it was, like you said, she's creative. She's using stuff that I've said in the past, or we've made fun of me in the past for, you know, with wine or, you know, whatever it is. So that's what you got to do. But come aggressive, you know, if you want to make me mad.
Yeah. I mean, well, yeah, and she already has TJ swag, so we can't give her any more stuff. She's good. She's tapped out.
No, she's got plenty of stuff.
But that was pretty funny, very creative, you know, and anytime we can get Mara on the show, it's probably going to be a good time. So props to you, Mrs. Moose. We greatly appreciate that. By the way, we should give her a shout out on Twitter. If you don't follow her, she is at the Miss MRS Metzger, MetZger. Also famous, very famous, very, very famous for the Moose Call, which she performed twice during our PGA Championship Recap with Friends podcast. That if you did not listen to that, you're
very underrated.
Very
show.
Underrated podcast, yes. Very chaotic. No real meaning or value, but you should listen just for her Moose Call. It's very good.
All right. And it's near the beginning, too. So well, it's not like
yeah, the first one's near the beginning, and then she does another one at the end to sign off the show. So you could fast forward if you wanted to.
Yeah.
All right. So that's pretty much all the useless stuff that we have to talk about, which is more than the useful stuff that we have to talk about. So Pat, let's get into Eastlake. This is it. I will be at Eastlake on Saturday. So I actually already know of a couple listeners that are going to be out there. If you guys are going to be out there Saturday, look for me. I'll be there with my 7-year-old, with my mini me. You guys can meet him, Collins. He's a big TJ fan. And this will be his first ever PGA Tour event. He's pretty pumped. He's been to the Drive, Chip, and Putt. The Masters a few years, but this is the first time I'm going to let him see the big boys, mainly because to let him see the big boys at the Masters, it would cost me $400, $500 just to go on a Monday. So he will be out there with myself on Saturday. We'll be there all day. So come find us and let's get crunk. So Pat, why don't you kick us off with the course breakdown of well-known Eastlake, 2 hours from where I sit right now, 2 hours.
Yeah. Fantastic course,
yeah.
By the way, mm-hmm. And I have actually had the opportunity to play it once, so which
of
I
course.
Mentioned probably last year. I'm going to mention. I'm going to probably every year we do this course. I'm going to mention it.
Right.
That I've played there, but it is a fantastic course in Atlanta, GA, Eastlake Golf Club, playing as a par 70, 7,400 yards, which is, you know, pretty long for a par 70. So you're only going to have two par fives, so there's not, you know, a ton of holes that these guys can take advantage of. It's a pretty difficult course. I mean, if you miss the fairways on this course, you are screwed. I mean, this rough is thick Bermuda rough. You've got to keep it in the fairways, and it's not exactly easy to keep it in the fairways. So I think when you're looking at stats, I want to look at guys that are, you know, at least in the top half. I mean, we only got 30 guys, so you're going to have to, you know, sort of siphon through a lot of the stats, but I think that definitely fairways hit, fairways gained. You know, you got Bermuda greens, they usually run pretty quick. You know, the course itself, obviously, we got no cut this week, so I think strategy wise, I don't know. For me, I'm looking at sort of studs and duds. I think that's because you've got to have the winner there. You are not going to win a GPP or whatever else, which is mostly what I'm going to play this week, is just GPPs and just fire in some lineups and see what happens. I'm playing lighter this week. I'm not going to play, just like last week, I'm not playing a ton of money. You know, you got, you know, looking at the FedEx Cup standings, I think that's important. You got the top five guys, which are Jordan, JT, DJ, Leishman, and then Rahm, and then Fowler's in that sixth spot. So the top five guys, if they win, they win the whole thing. So there's no variability right there at all. But the after that, there is going to have to be some things that happen to, you know, on the good side for them to win. And I think Fowler at six in that sixth spot is sort of interesting to me. But, you know, other than that, I think it's just you got to pick guys that are hitting fairways, that are playing good right now. If you look at the past FedEx Cup champions, they always seem to be kind of on that, you know, on a good run and good recent form. I mean, look at Billy Horschel back in 2014. Just sort of went on a good run in the playoffs. You got Spieth in 15, Rory last year, all the same. I mean, they were just playing fantastic at the end of the year. So recent form, I think, is huge this week. And a little bit of course history, though, because this is a tough course. And I think you'll see these guys, play it similar how they have in the past. And so I'm not going to, guys that don't have a really good course history here, if they're up near the top, especially in those FedEx Cup standings, I'm not really going to play those guys. So weather-wise, this week it's going to be pretty, you get rain possibly Thursday and Friday. Other than that, though, winds aren't going to be a factor and should be a pretty nice over the weekend. So there you go.
Well, very well done. I mean, I think I'm looking at this a little bit different than you are, maybe slightly. I think the studs and duds combo is what will be the most likely. And just like last week, again, you have to have ownership leverage for sure. So I don't know. I kind of think the mid tier is where you can get a little leverage if you're, bold enough to fade the top few guys. But I do, I do like some of the guys at the top anyway. I'm still going to have some lineups there, but I don't know, man. It's a tough
week.
See,
Here's my thinking on that, because, and again, we got 30 guys, so, but it's just, like I said earlier, you've got to have the winner. So why not try and get, because I think the winner of this tournament is going to come out of those top, 9K and above guys, probably 10K. So if you can get two guys in that 10K range and over, then at least get those two guys and then hope that the bottom guys you play hit. Other than that, I feel like going mid-range is going to be chalk, because there's so many guys that are so good in this mid-range.
Yeah, I mean, I get that too. I don't know. It's whack. I mean, one lineup, you're going to have 20% of the field in one lineup, which, yeah. I mean, if you equate that to a normal week on tour, that would be a lineup of 28 people. So, finding variability is tough, which is, again, one reason why I agree with you. I'm lowering my bankroll this week. I mean, I don't know. I just don't have success at all with stuff like this. So I will be GPP only. I'm not even messing with cash, and I'm just whatever. I'm going to have some lineups for sure. Let's get started. I mean, I did look pretty heavily in strokes gain total at Eastlake over the last 5 years. I think that's important. So looking at guys who in the last 5 years have played Eastlake a few times and are really gaining strokes on the field. So your course history guys, basically your course horses, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
Weighting DraftKings scoring very heavily for DraftKings stuff. And then when I look back at the history, if you look back at the history and you look at where the guys that finished in the top 10 really excelled, it is, again, a lot like the BMW last week. Heavy on strokes gained approach. Now, you did mention the fairways are a little tighter at Eastlake. I agree. Bermuda rough in the fall down south is almost at times more difficult than it is in the spring and summer. I mean, in the spring and summer, Bermuda rough, it'll be thicker, a little more dense. Like sometimes the ball will sit on top of it. In the fall, it's less than that, and so it'll like nestle. So
let me tell you, when I played out there, it was a week or maybe it's like 2 weeks after the Tour Championship. And if you were in the rough and they had it cut fairly similar to how they did in the Tour Championship, it was not pretty. Now, they're getting it out better than I was. I mean, I'm not going to pretend course. Here that I'm, let's, well, we all know that. But it's tough. It is not easy. And you're not getting good lies. It's not sitting up for you. So you got to hit fairways. I mean, you have to out here.
All right. Yeah. So that's kind of what I'm waiting. I looked at the last 8, 12, and 24 rounds. I'm going very recent here for these top 30 guys. I mean, everybody in this field has played well this year. Everybody in this field, for the most part, you're looking at a lot of guys on tour that have won a PGA Tour event. I mean, I'm trying to find somebody. I guess Patrick Cantlay hasn't yet, but definitely will. I mean, other than that, you look at it, everybody in the field has won on tour before. So You got a good field. I'm keying in on a couple of those stats, and then it's all about ownership when it comes to DraftKings. So, why don't you kick us off in the, since you're going to be studs and duds, who are your studs?
Well, and let me preface this with, I'm taking a lot of guys that are, I'm thinking of more from a GPP standpoint. So, and now one of these guys I think could be a little more chalky, but I'm all in on DJ and Ricky Fowler this week. Those are my only two plays above 10K. And I will probably put them in some lineups together. As I mentioned, the studs and duds deal, I think I'm going to play both those guys together. DJ, for me, I mean, he's never finished outside the top 10 in this tournament. You know, another thing I looked at was proximity, more of a greens and regulation, but where they, you know, where they're hitting it on those greens and regulation. So I like DJ. Fowler, to me, his recent form's incredible. Strokes gained around the green. I mean, scrambling is going to be key here. That's one of the top things you're going to have to look at. And putting is good. And then, you know, he's eighth in the field in fairways gained. So I think I'm zeroing in on those two guys, Fowler and DJ. That's it.
I like Fowler. I think he's got the all-around game to win. I've been on in the last few weeks. I'm actually going to lean strictly on one player in this five-digit category, and that's DJ. I don't know. I think DJ could go lower owned than the top three. I don't know about Day. I mean, DJ was only around 12% owned across most DraftKings contests last week.
He was, and I think you're going to see similar this week.
Which I
think
speed, which I would be happy about. Yeah.
Yeah, I would too.
I mean, he finished tied for 33rd, which probably left a lot of people irritated with DJ's performance last week. But it's really just an ownership edge for me. I hope he finds it. I hope he, you know, I think he wants that 10 mil. And first-time FedEx Cup champion he would be if he did it. I think Ricky's just as hungry. So I like the Ricky play.
I think there's a little bit of a thing. I think, like you said, there's an ownership thing, and there's a little bit of just this competition between these guys like Spieth, Fowler, JT, you know, that whole group. I mean, they all want to kind of one-up each other. I like Fowler to come in and sort of take it, sort of steal the show. So that's why I'm all about him.
All right, so for the most part, agreement there. I mean, I'm just going to go all in on one guy in that top tier. Day popped for me. I mean, he checked both my stat category boxes. He's done well at Eastlake. By the way, DJ has gained 17 strokes on the field at Eastlake in the last 5 years, which is second to only one other player who I bet we'll both mention here in just a minute. But Day's played well here too. Great to see him play well last week after parting ways with Colin Swatton as far as being a caddy. But you know, they also talked about his back tightening up again and all this other little stuff. I'm going to go all in on DJ, and that's my guy. So, anybody out of Thomas, Rahm, or Hideki for you?
No, I mean.
Okay, so just full out fade there.
Yeah, just full. I think if you're wanting to, you know, we talked about, you know, betting a little bit earlier. I mean, I think if you're wanting to bet, you may look at a guy like Hideki. I think his odds are decent. He's around 18 to 20 to 1 or so. But other than that, I mean, this pricing this week really lines up like almost exactly with the betting odds.
Yeah, so there's not a whole lot of outliers there. I mean, I will say 18 to 1 at Hideki stood out to me too. I mean, his recent form in the last couple of weeks has not been good. But if you just said you can get Hideki 18 to 1 at Eastlake, you know, 5-6 weeks ago, you probably would have jumped on that. I mean, he probably would have been in the single digits for Eastlake, so not a terrible number, it seems. I don't bet guys that are, you know, I like longer odds, so because I don't bet as much, so I won't be betting him. But and I'm actually in full agreement with you. I don't have anybody in the 9K range. I'm going to be pulling for John Rahm. Just heart and soul is going to be pulling for John Rahm and our boy Adam Hayes on the bag. But I don't think I'll have a lot of him in DFS just because I gotta trim up my guys a little bit.
In the
in the 8K range, I got two guys that I like, and they're probably both going to be quite chalky. The first one is the guy who has gained more strokes at East Lake in the last 5 years than any other player in this field. He's gained 28 strokes. Second place in this field is DJ, who's gained 17. And that's Justin Rose, who played well last week as well at 8,900. Loving some Justin Rose at that price. And then at 8,400, I got to back Leishman. I mean, I think he's probably inspired after that win. Hadn't won in a little while. And to have vaulted all the way up to fourth in the FedEx Cup standings and have a shot to win 10 mil. He checks the boxes for me in scoring and strokes gained approach. I like him. So I think I would keep riding the hot hand there with Leishman. So Rose and Leishman are my guys.
No, I'm totally with you on Rose. I mean, I think, you know, he's never finished worse than sixth in this tournament. So there's something to be said for that. He's got 2 second place finishes, and this is only out of, like, I think 4 or 5 times playing. So Rose, to me, is my top guy there. Another guy that we faded, I think, a little bit last week was Paul Casey at 8,600. But I'm back on him this week. I think this is, you know, he's played here twice. He had fourth last year. He was T5 in 2015. He's obviously been checking a ton of boxes as far as the stats are concerned and playing really well. You know, I mean, he was, I guess, last week didn't have a great week. We faded him on the good week. You know, he was T33 last week. But before that, you know, T4, 5th place at the Northern Trust, 13th at the PGA. So I think that I'm going to be back on Paul Casey this week at 8,600. And I'm going to be kind of banking a little bit on the fact that maybe there's going to be some people that just sort of sour to him just, you know, with the short memory and not finishing great last week. So I do think I'm going to play some Paul Casey at 8,600.
Yeah, maybe, other than that, maybe a little bit of that. I mean, he was 28% owned on average last week in DraftKings, and with the T33 finish coming after the really strong finishes before that, I could see a little bit of that. So don't mind the play. In the 7K range, I got two guys. I'm going to be pretty heavy on Kevin Chappell at 7,600. I really like Chapp. He checks the box in scoring. Also a pretty good iron player when he gets it going. I feel like the value is good for old Chappie. Now, he is 28 to 1 on my bookie. And I kind of don't mind that number. I mean, and we're going to start getting into this range where I'm going to make this statement, and it applies to basically everyone below Chappell. And that is, like, remember, Bill Haas and Billy Horschel won the Tour Championship before. So, I think the year that Haas won it, he was ranked, like, I think he was in the 25th spot out of 30. So, you know, I mean, we have had a lot of chalk hit lately, which is expected in events like this. You've had a lot of chalk. But it has happened at East Lake before where, you know, the absolute monsters of the game don't win. And I think Kevin Chappell is a scorer. He's confident. He's had a great season. He's won on tour. He's competed in majors. And I like his odds at 28 to 1. One of the other things I looked at is, like, you know, there's all these mathematical scenarios of what has to happen for some of these guys to actually win the FedEx Cup as well. And when you get into, like, the Chappell range, he has to have, like, Jordan Spieth finish tied for 12th or worse, and then then have, like, everybody from 2nd to 6th in the FedEx Cup finish 5th or worse. Which, you know, odds aren't great, but that's possible. Like, you start to get doable at that point. So, in other words, like, I just feel like there's a part in the back of a guy like Chappell's mind that going into a week like this that says, I can do this, and if I win, which is all I can control, I have a real chance at winning the whole thing. So Chappell, I'm a big fan of at 7,600. And then finally, in the $7,000 range, Charlie Hoffman, his buddy, at 7,300. Charlie checking the box in strokes gained approach. always good for, you know, some birdies, always good to show up in big fields with big names, especially like we've seen in majors. Possibly a good first round leader bet, depending on the odds there. But he's around 50-1 on my bookie. So I don't, and he needs speed to finish like T7th or T8th or worse, which is again very doable. So those are my only two guys in the 7K.
Wow. You know what's interesting is like we always talk about how we never talk our picks before we record the show. And my two guys right there were Chapel and Hoffman. Which is
boom.
I mean, I think, and for all the reasons you said, I mean, Chapel, yeah, for me, Chapel just where he, you know, he's right there with Kuchar right around him, Patrick Reed. You know, Garcia's up there in the top of the 7K range.
Kuchar and Cantlay are going to eat up a lot of.
Yeah, they're. I just feel like he's a guy right there. If you're playing GPPs, go Chapel.
Yeah,
I mean he's going to be, you know, checks the box on, you know, approach around the green. You know, his recent form's good. Course history is great here. So I don't see. I mean, to me, he's the guy. He's the play. But and I'm totally with you on Hoffman. That was weird. I was expecting you to say Chapel, but not Hoffman. I was a little surprised that you went Hoffman there. So
has Chapel played here? I don't think Chapel's played here before.
Yeah, he has. Huh. Maybe not. Yeah, he played last year. He was second.
Oh, I didn't look at guys. I didn't look at guys who only played once in the last 5 years. When it came to like the strokes gained number, I didn't really look at only guys who played once. So.
Yeah, sorry, he has played here once, and it was a second place finish.
I like that. So that's everybody in the 7K, huh?
That's all I got.
I mean, if you're doing multiple lineups, like we're gonna have a couple, like a sprinkle or so of some of these other guys. We tried to narrow it down a lot tonight, just because
there's 30 guys,
and you guys would be crucifying us if we each named a bunch. Y'all be killing us. All right, so why don't you round us out in the 6K? Who you got? You're saying you're going studs and duds. So who are your duds?
All right, so I got three in here that I really like. One, all right, so right at the top, Daniel Berger at 6,900. I think that's just a ridiculous price for him. Checks the box on approach, around the green. He's putting well. So I do like Berger. Also proximity, which is another stat I mentioned. Here's my sneaky play. Brian Harman. I mean, Brian Harman is a guy that could just... He's a hit or miss guy. He's going to pop or he's not. But, you know, he checks the box on fairways gain. The guy hits fairways. You're not going to have to worry about that. He's a great scrambler, which you have to be on these greens. Putting well. Also checks the box on proximity. So 6,300 right at the bottom there, I think Brian Harman is a good play. And we've seen him play good in majors, which this is not a major. But it is a tournament where you've got to, you know, you got to play it like a major. I mean, he's probably not winning the 10 mil. But I do like Brian Harman, Georgia guy. And that's not why I like him. I just think this is just a good course that he's going to be familiar with and knows it well. So I like Brian Harman. And then Duff, another guy, another, you know, Auburn grad, Southern guy, barely made it in. I think wasn't he number 30?
He was number 30.
But playing pretty well. I mean, I think, you know, Duff is, this is a course that I think he can play well on. I mean, you've seen him play well in Atlanta before at Atlanta Athletic Club where he won the PGA Championship. Or wait. Was that?
No, that was not Atlanta Athletic Club.
That was Keegan that won that year in the playoff, right?
Yeah, but I don't think Keegan won at Atlanta Athletic Club, did he?
I can't remember.
Anyway,
whatever. I do like Duff this week. He's played this course three times as far as in tournament conditions, T8th last year, T9th in 2013, and T20 in 2012. So I think Duff is a good play at 6,500. I mean, he's a bottom level guy that is just very solid, playing well right now. So there you go. Those are my two or well, I guess three guys right there that I like: Berger, Harmon, and Jason Duffner.
All right, well, I'm going to do it because you didn't, and that's Kisner. It's 6,700. Listen, I know.
I can't do it. He sucks on this course.
I know. He has terrible course history. He has terrible form lately. I get it. But he was also completely off everyone's radar going into the PGA Championship and almost won the thing. Except for a late issues on Saturday night, and then just not playing well Sunday. I just there's something about it. It's a gut call, if you will. And I know he's our boy and all this kind of stuff.
It has to be because he's played twice in the Tour Championship.
And he's not played well. I know.
And he's literally almost finished last.
I know. I told you it's a GPP ownership week. If it's DraftKings, it is what it is. He's also 100-1 on my bookie, which 100-1 on Kiz, I don't really care what his course history is. 100-1 on Kisner in a 30-man field. You're telling me, I don't really know. I'm not like the most genius, like sports better, but I mean, is that basically saying that if they played this event 100 times, he'd win it once? Is that basically saying that? I don't know, but if it is, I think that's ludicrous. I think Kiz is a gamer, and he's just a gamer. And if you don't think he's going to show up for 10 mil, he is. In his scenario, he would need Jordan Spieth to finish tied for 11th or worse, and then the second through the sixth place guys finish T5th or worse. So, I mean, it's doable, but I don't know. It's just a gut feel. I just couldn't overlook it. You know, I don't know. But 100-1 on my bookie, and I'll play him in DraftKings just because the ownership's going to be low. He's pissed off so many people. In the last few weeks just because he's been bad. So that's that one. I got two more. The other one's Gary Woodland at 6,400. Gary played pretty well this past week. He's actually 55-1 at my bookie and checks the box in strokes gained approach. Yeah, I mean, I kind of like old Gare Bear, little Gare Bear. And then the lower owned guy was a guy you were on last week. Shout out! I think he finished tied for 12th. That's Pat Perez. Pat Perez playing with some confidence right now. I think he's probably excited to be here. He, you know, doesn't get to East Lake very often, if ever. I think so. I don't mind Perez at 6,400. He's another one kind of on my radar. So that's it for me. So to recap mine, I'm going DJ, Rose, Leishman, Chapel, Hoffman, Kisner, Woodland, and Perez. Those are my main boys. So yeah. All right. Anything else to add on that? You got any other comments there?
I don't. I'm just
all done.
I'm done.
Hey,
I'm done for the season.
This PGA Tour season is in the books, but I have a feeling we will be back next week. We will be back with possibly an interview. We're working on some stuff.
I think we'll have a great, fantastic interview.
Stuff's going down.
Yeah.
Okay, well, don't tease that too much because you're speaking in faith right now. We don't have anything locked up, so just...
No, I mean, I'm just saying. Yeah. I mean, it may not be next week, but it's coming.
Yeah.
We know it's coming.
Of course. Listen, everybody, we really appreciate you guys supporting us all year. It's been awesome, and we have like 3 weeks to rest, and it's going to start back up again. You know what, though? We got a new fresh batch of web.com guys coming over that we can look at. Some of them we've seen before. Some of them have been on tour before. Some of them haven't. So we'll get to kind of like break down who's, you know, this year's Wesley Bryan or, you know, Brandon Hagee, Trey Mullinax.
We gotta throw a congrats out to Chesson Hadley. He's come on the show just won for the second time this year. He is on fire heading into the season. One of the guys I would definitely look at in this fall swing.
Yeah, great dude too, man. Such a great guy. Yeah, good interview. Awesome. If you have not listened to that, you got to go back in the archives a little bit. But that was a good interview he did with us. He'd fresh off of the Bojangles biscuit line when he called us. So,
I forgot.
Yeah,
about
you guys got to cop that if you haven't seen it already. All right, listen. This 30-man field podcast has gone on long enough. We have got to go, but we do wish you the best. Green screens all around. If you head over to my bookie, hope you get some cash, get some of that Quan. Let us know how it goes. Don't forget to call into the hotline and try to piss off Pat. Shout out to Miss Moose, Miss Metzger for doing that. I apologize to my parents and my wife for drawing the vulgar pictures in my kindergarten and first grade yearbook. If I can round those up, I'll see about sharing that. Probably not, though, because my wife would probably hurt me. And if you have a 13-year-old boy at home, message me. We'll get in a support group together. Maybe we can work some stuff out. Dads versus dads kind of thing. All right. I'll be at East Lake Saturday. Ladies, gentlemen, enjoy your week. Enjoy the Tour Championship. Last event of the season. See ya! Out!
Yo! Everybody get up! Everybody get up! Everybody needs to understand that I'm more than simply a hype man for this rap group. Just like Geico is more than just a company that can save you money. Geico also has fast and friendly claim service, so they can help you when you need it most. And while I do love being a hype man, I also love reading for children's audiobooks. Like Little Bo Peep, she lost a sheep, and she don't know where to find them. Go!
Geico. Expect great savings and a whole lot more.